As much as I like to fight everyone, I'm having a pretty good time here. Why you mad? Why you mad? Why you mad? Why you mad?
All right. Hey, Luisa.
Hi, Jake.
What's up?
I forgot to tell you that this should also like be like an hour max. Because we've been talking too much on the previous episodes.
Yeah, no shit.
But also the problem is that we have like no real plan of what to talk about, but we both have lists in front of us of all the things that made us mad this week.
I don't plan for this podcast. I just make a mental list of shit and I'm like, there's five things on it. We'll get through one and a half of them and we'll be going for 2 hours. I'm all about method. You understand? That's part of like why I'm able to have three podcasts is that I go, okay, this is just how this one works. Just press control F every time we do it. And that's what, that's what a why you mad is. And then a PDA is this. And then a fucking another one is this.
Some of them are homework and some of them are pleasure watches. And then why you mad is somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, because there's research that goes into this, but it's the shit that I was interested in
anyway. Yeah, exactly.
That's why I'm able to do this. It doesn't take up that much of my time because I'm like, every week I was going to watch a movie or read a book or whatever anyway.
You get it. And we just discussed some books and some things that we got to read and watch and whatnot. And I will watch this week. What is it? Poor Things. I know you already watched it. We wanted to talk about it. And the funny thing is,
well, you have to catch up with everyone now.
I know. Exactly.
It finally got into streaming and it broke out of its little indie bubble. And
And then I don't know if you saw that like Complex wrote, like had an article about how like regular people hate it.
A lot of people do.
Yeah. Like apparently it's like an indie darling for like critics. And like the hoity-toity film fans, but the regular people are like, "What the fuck?"
But hoi polloi.
Yeah, so like, I'm not prepared to talk about it because I haven't seen it. However, I also never watch award shows. But another podcaster invited me. He's like the kind of podcaster that does watch award shows, and he invited me to go to his house for a. Check this out, an Oscar watching party. You ever heard of this?
I've heard of these, yeah.
I'm just kidding, I've heard of them. But like, I was just like, hilarious. Thank you for the invite, but absolutely not.
It's like inviting you to a wedding or something.
Yeah, like, what are you doing? I'm going to laugh. No. So I was like, cool, thanks for the invite, but to be very honest with you, I am absolutely never going to watch the award show, but I will comment on it the next day. So that's what I'm here to do, Jake. I've got a whole list. Well, I've got a list of top five things that we need to talk about the Oscars if you did not watch the Oscars.
I didn't watch them either. Let's do a podcast about them. I feel like that's going to make people so angry.
Yes, I love that. I'm like, well, I mean, honestly, what's more important than the shit that makes it out of the thing, like outside of the bubble of the people who watch the thing, right?
Uh-huh.
Isn't that like more important? Like whatever actually happened in the room or whatever actually happened on the televised version that you all saw, honestly, doesn't matter as much as what was the version that got outside of that bubble.
That is kind of how things work now.
Yeah.
I think if I worked at a TV network or something and I was collecting data, that would be something to keep in mind of like, there should be a name for that, like an isolated, what does everyone just get in the third degree from like social media and shit.
If you did like a word cloud, you know, you ever done a word cloud? You seen a word cloud?
I've seen such things.
Okay, so you know how like the most common idea has the biggest bubble, right?
The idea of a word cloud to me, when I found out at some point in my adult life that someone with like 6 years of college, that's their fucking job is they go to work and do that. I was digging a ditch or something and just threw my shovel down. It was like, I'm so mad. Jobs are fake. Professionalism is fake. Word clouds, we did those in like middle school, man.
Yeah, dude. There are people whose jobs it is to name nail polish colors and candle scents. Okay.
So I could do that all in one day.
But you would need a word cloud. Okay. So this is the point.
Whatever.
Is the biggest or like the most powerful idea, the most common idea gets the biggest bubble. So I would say to you that whatever got out of the bubble of like, oh, I'm a film person in the film industry, and then further got out of the bubble of like, oh, I'm a fan of film and fucking award shows and fashion and red carpet, blah. And then outside of that, if a bunch of people are like, no, I never watched any of this. I don't give a fuck. I barely can tell all the Chris actors apart, you know, like that kind of thing. Uh-huh. And yet I can name to you five important things that happened at the Oscars last weekend. That seems like the giant clouds in the word cloud. No?
I think I follow.
You think you follow? I mean, because we certainly don't know about like the very specific minutia of like...
Nerds know about that. And I find them very interesting. Those people I will talk to about the Oscars who can tell you stuff about
disrespect to them,
run time means this happened and it got released in this part of the year. That shit's interesting.
Totally.
The middle stuff is boring. And then the meme stuff I'll pay attention to.
This is why I do this podcast with you, because I completely agree. I think I agree. I like all those things about like technical awards, like all that crazy shit about like scores and whatnot. But then when we get to the middle section of like, I just give a fuck about your stupid dress on the red carpet and like, did my favorite actress get the thing? I don't give a fuck. I just don't give a fuck. But
then it's like somebody slapped Chris Rock. Okay, I'll pay attention to that.
Great. Yeah, exactly.
Even though I didn't see it, that's still fun to see on the timeline, you know?
Absolutely. So you get it. In last year's Oscar, Chris Rock getting slapped would have been like the biggest cloud in the word cloud.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
It will forever be the thing people remember it for.
Do you ever think about this? This kind of relates to this, I think. Now when you like make a thing, when you make a movie or a TV show, it seems like there's probably like a department they hire to make memes. Like they don't happen organically anymore. Yeah. They're like a marketing tool. It used to be a thing that people did in reaction to seeing stuff.
Yeah.
But the reason it's like every time a new movie rolls out, there's a bunch of like forced memes is because they know that part of the way that we consume this shit now and the marketing itself is like I just heard about the thing and I'm just repeating it. Even if you never saw the movie, you're still doing them kind of like a favor if you're like, you know, he who controls the spice controls the galaxy or whatever.
Yeah, totally.
Make a joke out of it or whatever, you know.
I'm so mad at Dune, but yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
I guess I've read the book. I was gonna say don't spoil it, but I haven't seen the new movie.
I haven't seen the new movie either, but I'm already mad at it.
Oh, okay, we'll get to that.
I mean, no, we'll get to it after I watch it, I guess, but I'm kind of generally upset at the fact that basically these fucking idiots in Hollywood, they took something that was like a seven books. I don't know, whatever. The original version of Dune was serialized essays on Scientific American, I believe. And so the concept of like even books or chapters for it doesn't really make sense.
I've read the first book. It was a book, but was it originally?
Oh, it was originally published in Scientific American as short stories. They were serialized for like a long period of time.
Okay.
So the entire seven book series, I don't know. I read them all, but I don't remember how many, because his son also wrote two, I think.
Yeah, because he died after the second one or some shit.
But the full Dune series, oh God, let me Google it. Whatever, it's either seven or eight books.
That is how like old pulp, like sci-fi and horror and stuff like that used to be published.
Yeah, it's like zine shit, yeah.
But you would then put, like, it's normal to compile those into a fucking...
into a book.
Yeah.
But Dune, hold on, total books.
I've read the first
six
one.
Books. Okay, I was overestimating because his son wrote two, so that's why I was thinking eight. Right. Uh-huh. So Frank Herbert wrote six books, or he wrote a bunch of short essays that ended up getting published as six books. Okay. Uh-huh. The original Dune movie only covers book one. Right.
Okay.
The new Dune movies, part one is half of book one, and part two presumably is the second half of book one.
Yeah, it is. I've heard.
So they're just stretching out fucking book one when the entire point of Dune is that book one is wrong. All right. So I keep seeing all these memes that make me so mad on the internet, because like people keep being like, oh, it's Boyfriend Explains Dune season. And I'm like, God damn it, I am Boyfriend and I'm explaining Dune to everyone I know. And I hate that we're going to do this fucking bullshit, especially, I don't know if you've seen like, I'm sorry that I can't remember his name right now, but like a Palestinian scholar that is exiled, you know, he's not currently in Palestine. He I guess had the opportunity to see Dune 2, and then he like made a thread. I'll share it for the Patreon, whatever, what it was when I find it later. But he made the point of like, how is it possible that we're watching this movie where an imperial white coded force goes after an Arab coded like force that we very clearly see as like the good guys when you're watching the movie,
right? Yeah.
And yeah, for the rest of the world, as we're watching Palestine be obliterated, we're still arguing, oh, like he, I think he specifically said like nobody's arguing that the Harkonnens have the right to defend themselves. You know, and it's like, yeah, exactly. So it's like pretty gross and sick that Hollywood is like doing everything they can generally to like milk money out of this by making it the longest, like stretching it out to be like, oh, it's a hero story, it's about the little guy. And like I saw a meme that I shared this week, no Jake, because literally Paul is the bad guy.
I know, I've read the books.
Yeah, exactly. So then the fact that all these fucking assholes are like, oh, I fucking love it. And then even what's the little girl actress from The Menu, I guess she's gonna be in this one or in the next one, I don't know. And so she was like going
with the
around
huge eyes.
Yeah. She was doing like press junket shit, like dressed as like a Muslim woman, basically like Muslim coded, but like fashionable, make it fashionable. And none of these actors have like done anything in any way to like stand on the side of these people that they fictionally are representing.
Have they not? I mean, a lot of like celebrities right now are doing the call for ceasefire.
I don't think any of the Dune
thing.
Ones. Any of the Dune people, you know?
I'm going to look it up. It's become, honestly, it's kind of bumming me out because it's become very normal for them just to say, I've called for a ceasefire and then nothing more, because that's the stigma has kind of dropped around that. There's a
You mean like by just doing it online or whatever, by like signing up to a group or
just
whatever,
signing a thing or whatever. There's a there's a Twitter account that's like that tracks celebrities calling for ceasefires, and like a lot of actors have. I'm gonna look it up while you're talking, but I want to say fucking people in that movie have. But I don't know if they're doing anything more. You know?
No, totally. So okay, so I wouldn't discount that bullshit of like signing a thing and signing up to a group, or even wearing the fucking pin. Whatever, good for you. But funnily enough, one of the points that I was ready to bring up to you is this thing with, what's this fucking guy's name? Oh, Mark Ruffalo, right? So did you see him on the red carpet or no?
No.
Okay. What so, did you do? Yeah. So this is what happened. So this is what's funny. It's like I'm online enough that I did catch shit about this fucking event, but I did not watch the event. But so basically what happened is that pro-Palestine protesters shut down the whole street or whatever in LA in front of wherever the fuck the Oscars are at. So this caused like a bunch of the celebrity people to be delayed in getting to the red carpet because of the pro-Palestine protesters. Uh-huh. So apparently, you know, I guess the show started even like 5 minutes late because a bunch of people weren't there because of the protesters. And apparently some celebrities were like complaining on the red carpet as they get off, like, oh my God, traffic, we couldn't get here. And then Mark Ruffalo gets out of his fucking little limo or whatever with his lady. I don't know who she is. So he gets out and then they're just like waving and everybody's like clearly walking very fast. Like we're all late. You know what I mean? Like they're all very fast. And Ruffalo immediately like stops to talk to some reporters. And he's like basically being like pro-Palestine protesters and being like, hey man, yeah, it's good for them, good on them that they're like telling everyone and reminding everyone that instead of watching this, like we should be paying attention to what's happening in Palestine and whatever. And it's like a whole clip where he like took the time to say this is not a uncomfortable thing, this is the correct thing to do. And he was also one of the ones wearing the pin, I think. And so then on Twitter and online, everybody was like celebrating Mark Ruffalo, right? And then some people, the Debbie Downers of the world, were like, but like what is it? The reason that his career is fine after he stands by Palestine is because he's already been designated as like one of these like liberal, like kooky guys that's always going to be like an idealist, right? That's like, oh, isn't that cute? Like Susan Sarandon or like, who's the other one? I think I wrote it down. Or even like Michael Moore, because I don't know if you saw that the clip was going around from 21 years ago. Michael Moore won an award for his documentary. And then he went up and he like did a whole speech about how it was wrong that we were bombing Iraq.
Yeah.
And everybody booed him, right? And instead, at this one, like Ruffalo is speaking up about this shit. And the point that somebody was trying to make of like, he gets to say what he says without danger to his career because he already got classified as like a kooky liberal fucking hippie weirdo is true. But the thing is, that is exactly why every single person with a platform or every artist has a responsibility, not just to sign a stupid thing like they're part of a group.
Exactly.
But like actually every single time the cameras are on you, to say it. Every single time that you can bring it up, make it uncomfortable for the people that wouldn't be willing to say it.
Because speaking out on behalf of Palestine was a third rail issue up until fairly recently. The first round of fucking famous people to say, hey, I think there should be a ceasefire. Very brave. What they did is they created a fucking safe precedent for all these other people to come out and do it. And now it's like probably nothing will happen to your career because literally every other fucking famous person.
They're still not doing it.
Right. Well, but there's more is what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the fucking boundary has to continue to be pushed until there is more Michael Moores would be the fucking goal. By the way, I looked it up and there's like half of the cast has said stuff in favor of Palestine and there's boycotts because of that. And then there's also boycotts, I think, on the other side. But Timothy Chalamet hasn't called for a ceasefire, but he's getting trouble for making a Hamas joke on Saturday Night Live. That was kind of anti-Hamas. Honestly, I think it's a nothing thing. Like it was just a word joke, but people were like, people like Zionists were mad. And I think people on our side were mad. But I wouldn't characterize the cast of Dune as being particularly not going far enough or particularly going too far. They're kind of right in the middle, I'd say, as a litmus test of just where celebrities are now.
Yeah, but they're also
I'm not defending them.
No. But they're also, it's different because they're also directly benefiting from a source material that is entirely based on like, you are depicting an Arab people being oppressed for a resource that can be taken from them so that the rest of the white world can fucking benefit. Are you fucking kidding me? It's not like you're doing a fucking New England romance or whatever the fuck. Like, nobody's asking you to be like the Bob's Burgers people be out here saying some shit. But, and to make, you know, to prove my point, I guess, the person that did get a lot of shit was this Jonathan Glazer fella. You saw that, right? No?
Yeah, well, who's that?
I hate talking about directors because I really don't give a fuck about directors. No offense out there, directors. But Jonathan Glazer is the guy that wrote and directed the Holocaust movie that won an award. I think it was for best.
Oh, okay. I heard about this.
Zone of Interest. Zone of Interest is what it's called. And so he basically won an award. He's a Jewish man who won an award for making a movie about the Holocaust. And then he, in his acceptance speech, he basically said that he refutes the idea of anyone using Judaism or the Holocaust as justification for an ongoing conflict now, right?
Right.
And an ongoing oppression of some people now. And then, which is like super brave, so brave. So it is that Michael Moore level of braveness of like,
Go for
you could have gone up there like a little bitch and just taken your award and been like, cool, yay, thank you. You know, but instead you pointed out the hypocrisy of being awarded this this specific award being specifically about the Holocaust and the like the oppression and the unjust decimation of your people, while a similar unjust decimation of another people is happening at the hands of a group that is claiming your Judaism and your family's Holocaust as the rationale for what they're doing. And you're not going to say anything about that? That's fucking crazy. So he goes up and he does the brave thing and he says it. And you can even see his hands shaking, Jake. Like, he's like, you know, he's a director. He's not a front of the screen guy. So he's like me. He's nervous. He's like, oh, God, this is terrible. Okay, I'm going to say the thing I have to say. They get off stage. And then the whole internet, the right wing, you know, Zionist side of the internet, immediately starts attacking this man as like a self-hating Jew. As
right. The way they framed it is that he renounced Judaism.
Yeah.
Not just his, but like Judaism in general, which is just like they just are going to constantly reframe everything like that happens as being against Jews.
Absolutely.
Even though it's against Zionism.
Well, so, I mean, it was awesome, and I hope, I mean, I'm sure it's going to hurt his career, but...
yeah, but, like, if people don't collectively do this stuff, or if people don't individually do it, it can't become a collective thing. Somebody has to be the fucking bravest person to step out all the time.
Totally. That's the point that I'm trying to get at, is the don't act like Mark Ruffalo and Susan Sarandon. They're so silly. Oh, my God. They can do this because they've already been accepted as, like, silly idealists and whatever, like, no, man. Honestly, if you are doing fucking movies that are a romance on the whatever, like Victorian times, whatever the fuck, or you are doing an urban comedy show, or you're doing a fucking rodeo show in Texas, whatever platform you have, you should be speaking about this. If you have morals and an opinion, fucking bring it out. Wear the flag. Wear the shirt. Do something about it.
I agree.
Make it normal. Make it normal.
I agree with everything you're saying, except for the thing about it being broken down into two movies getting through just the first book. I'm going to say, just on a fucking craft level, I think it works better than when they tried to cram the entire thing into one movie, especially because movies used to be shorter. But like you said, it's not really the first book is like a story arc, but it was a bunch of stories that were stitched together. So it's not like there's no demarcation here anywhere. It's a fucking fantasy thing. So it's a long sprawling thing. And I think that they made this movie famously like twice and it was fucking bad both times. And there was a third one that didn't get made. And a lot of it, I think, is because there's just too much plot to cram into an hour and a half. But in 6 hours, you can kind of pull it off. And I think that the thing about what you're saying about how, if you don't know, fucking spoiler alert, like the big 1-2 punch of Dune is that we go through the entire hero's journey with Paul Atreides being the Mobb Deeb and there being this kind of like Star Wars-y thing where he leads the Fremen to fucking overcome the Empire and shit. But then the punch of that, the misdirection is later on, it becomes a comment on how when you have like a Stalin character like that, they're still around and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And Frank Herbert seems like he was kind of an anarchist in that sense and that he was really criticizing hierarchies and stuff. And that's not going to be able to happen until if and when there's a third movie. So what we have right now, having the second one come out, is a bunch of people who didn't read the books walk away and think that the message of it is just this hero's story about this white savior that fucking comes and rides in on the Fremen, right? But I think this is good because this is the setup. And then they get to make the next one where everyone goes, holy shit.
So that's my problem. It's like, okay, I will not be mad at a good interpretation of this first book over 6 hours if there is a third film. But I do not know that there will be a third film. I cannot guarantee it because of the fact that America doesn't like it. As much as America pretends to like anti-heroes, Jake, they really don't. America really does like, and the only time you like an anti-hero is in this Paul version of it, where it's like he seems like the underdog, but ultimately he's the alpha guy.
If they don't make a third one, then that's going to suck really bad. But the thing is, America likes money, and this is a very successful film. So
how many times have we seen the Spider-Man original story of fucking his fucking uncle gets killed? We haven't seen like Spider-Man turns 52 and like what happens to Spider-Man.
I think that that's because of the, like, specifically what superhero comics are to like creatives in America, which is that they're American mythology in people's minds. Like every Batman movie is the same fucking thing too.
The same story, and
That's in the tradition of what they do in comic books, is that they like keep redoing the same myth over and over again. Because it says something or whatever.
Okay, I can see that.
It's fun if you're a comic writer, is to I get to do my take on the same thing. You know,
it's fine, and I would understand that, except that then does that mean that you agree that the worry then would be the comic bookification, the superheroification of Dune would be inappropriate? It would be inappropriate.
I think that would be bad, but I think what we're gonna get instead is like, I think that they're trying to make this. I really suspect there'll be a third one, because this seems like whenever they make big blockbusters like this, they're trying to make a new generation's fucking Star Wars. Like, there's Lord of the Rings, there's these big sprawling fantasy ones. This is kind of the same things in a different new setting. I think that's why it's fun and it works really well. It's because, like, oh, we've never had one on a sand planet before, you know? Usually it's in space or in the forest or whatever. My only problem is that I think, like, the director and the writer and stuff and the big studios, when they make stuff like this, just tend to like sand the edges off of shit like this.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I rewatched the first one, because I'm going to go watch the new one in a theater in a couple of days. I rewatched the one from a couple of years ago last night in my apartment. And on a rewatch, I thought they like, it, you know, I'm going to say it's as good as it could have been. Like, there's, you turn something into a Hollywood blockbuster like this, it's going to kind of numb it down and play into like tropes that are just like hero's journey stuff, because they fit. But I wasn't that mad at it. I thought that they kept the meaning of the story in there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm generally not, you know, I'm not a hater of like remakes or sequels or anything. I love it. I love all the remakes. But have you ever heard of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern? I can never say the name. But
I've heard of that, and I can't remember what the hell it is.
Okay, so it is. It's a play by what's this guy's name? Tom Stoppard. That's what it is. And this play is pretty interesting because it's one of the first things that I ever like was taught as a kid, I guess. That was this version of, like, I guess, wanting to write a new version of an existing story, right? I feel like so much of how we get educated about writing, like, even if you take a creative writing class or whatever, it's so much about, like, find an original thing that nobody ever wrote. Write what you know specifically that nobody else can know, right?
Yeah.
But I was like an AP literature or whatever in high school, and our teacher had us read Rosencrantz and Guildenstern because, and it's a play where basically in Hamlet, right? You read Hamlet?
Yeah.
Okay, so in Hamlet, there's a bunch of shit happening to Hamlet with his dad and whatever the fuck and blah, blah, blah. But the whole time that shit is happening to Hamlet, there's these two dudes from Denmark who are on a boat who were sent from Denmark to go kill Hamlet, right?
Uh-huh.
And so
something's rotten in Denmark.
Yeah, that's where that comes from too, right? But in the actual Shakespeare play, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are minor characters that have almost no lines. Like, they are just like a function of like eliminating Hamlet.
Uh-huh.
But Tom Stoppard's play is about the entire conversation and what happened while they were on the boat on the way to kill Hamlet.
I like stuff like that. There was a good Dracula movie a couple years ago that's kind of like that. In the book, it's just like one small story, but then they made a whole movie out of it.
Is this the Deuterium or whatever? No, the
Voyage of the Demeter.
Guy from Game of Thrones.
It was, you know, like a popcorn movie. I didn't think it was fucking great.
Well, I wanted to watch it because of that, because I like this kind of story where you're going to like fill in like a moment that was part of the canon, but was not fleshed out.
Yeah, it's that sort of thing. It was cool. Yeah. I didn't finish it. Like, I was at somebody's house and I had to leave. So maybe I'll finish it.
I really wanted to watch it. And then Gabe said it sucked. And I was like,
it struck me as like a forgettable, fun, like a popcorn flick. You heard that term, you know?
Yeah, no. And Gabe is also a snob about movies. So, like, he thinks, like, 70s film is the best and shit.
So boring.
So, I know. But you do have to watch Red Belt. And we got to talk about Red Belt. Everybody watch Red Belt. Anyway.
Everyone watch it.
But yeah, so wait, what were we talking about before Red Belt?
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, yeah. Whatever.
So I am not saying that like having canon material as your source material is in any way bad. It is so awesome. It can be really good both in, or like not both, but like in comic books and film and in stand up. Because if you can make it work, like even if people don't understand the reference of the source material, it should be good on its own, right? But also, if they do understand the reference to the source material, that's like an awesome Easter egg of like you connect this to the canon, right?
Yeah.
So I do think it can be done really well. Have you watched Pet Sematary, the new one?
No.
Oh, check it out. It was the same kind of thing, popcorn movie, where I'm not going to say it's like one of the best films ever made, but it did a really great job with being, I guess, like, it's not a it's a prequel technically, but obviously it's a sequel in the sense of it came after the original and used the original as its source material, right?
Yeah.
But on the in the new one, spoiler alert, what it does is give you the American colonial origins of how that haunted ground became the Pet Sematary.
That's cool. It's always hard to describe when they do that with a movie. Like yeah. When you tell someone about the first Purge, you get into a Who's On First thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, no, it's not the first one they made. It's called the first Purge.
Yeah, but it's like the fourth Purge. But it's very important because it's the first. Totally. No, exactly. So it's the same thing with Pet Sematary. And then, Jake, it also does the same thing. It does this thing where I guess the original one was like in the 80s, right? And then this one, which is a quote prequel, tells you the story of what actually happened during American colonial times to make it a like sacred, creepy, protected ground. But then also the story that is happening in the quote present time that you're watching is like Vietnam era America. So it simultaneously connects all the way to like Native American times, dominated times in this land, and colonial interference times, but also to a quote modern time in America when people were also having a moral dilemma about whether they should be losing their lives for this reason or that, and whether they were owed another chance and all this kind of shit. So it's fucking really good. So I am not against working off of source material from the canon, but I do think that the shit with like every Spider-Man movie, including the death of Uncle Ben, is a little bit ridiculous. Like, why are we every single time rehashing the story of how you became, like, every single Spider-Man movie has to have with more responsibilities, more, what is it? More power comes more responsibility.
Great power comes great responsibility. Yeah. I hate to say this because I have made fun of this person on the internet a lot, and I think they're a Nepo baby and stuff.
Yeah.
Or not, actually not a Nepo baby, but there's, I don't, this person, it seems like they're kind of a bully in the industry. But I will hand it to him. I will hand it to him.
You don't have to, but no, go on.
Kumail Nanjiani has a really good joke about this. Where okay. He's just, the joke is just like, how many times do I have to watch Uncle Ben die, you know?
For real, though.
It's like the same fucking thing over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But that's because superhero shit to Americans is modern mythology, and it's like saying how many times do I have to watch fucking
Jesus
Zeus
get crucified.
Yeah, like that's what you do with that
every
thing literally
Easter. Yeah,
right. And I think that's to people that are into comics.
Yeah.
And I don't hate this entirely, when especially when it's just in comic form and I want it dumbed down through like popcorn blockbusters and stuff, but like to people that are into it, that's why they're into it, because the artistry is the idea. Like, it's kind of interesting, what if there was like one song and like throughout history, like hundreds of people covered it. And every time someone covered it, they did it differently and made it mean something different and stuff like that, instead of like everyone trying to come up with new shit or whatever, just as a way of framing that like art. I think I get it, but I think the end result is bad. Honestly, because of the last 10 to 15 years of nonstop fucking Marvel movies and shit, I got really sour on superhero stuff and started to kind of come to this conclusion that the fucking form itself like is just lame. But I have friends that are really into it, and I've listened to enough podcasts by fucking dorks that are really into this shit that I kind of got convinced after a while. I kind of got shown the light, which is that actually, and I do remember being into some comics.
Yeah.
The thing itself, they had all this space to move around in, and they could say all these different things. The reason everyone feels so bad about this shit now is because they get made into blockbuster movies, and blockbuster movies are only allowed to be a three-act thing where you have to find the glowy stone and beat the fucking scary guy at the end or whatever. And it like ruined it. But there's like interesting stuff that happens, you know, especially like back in the early days with origins of, you know, what Spider-Man could have been. But, okay,
listen, I'm saying this criticism gently and with love as a police procedural drama fan.
Yeah.
Some of us love to sift through the shit to find one nugget here and there. All right. And that is what I'm doing with police procedurals. And I think that is also what people are doing with hero movies.
Okay? Well, I don't think that heroes used to all be like fascists, although Alan Moore would kind of disagree. He's kind of
I agree with Alan Moore.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I'm coming from. It's just that, like, the Green Arrow like was like a fucking like he's based on Robin Hood. He was like a communist superhero.
OK, but where do you land on Captain America?
I don't know really shit about him. I've, for obvious reasons, never been interested in reading about this shit.
Exactly, okay,
because it sounds fucking lame.
Well, apparently they tried to frame him as some kind of, like, World War II hero, so people think that he's, like, a good guy. I'm like, no, he's fascism 101. I'm out.
Right. And people always tell me, oh, you gotta watch Winter Soldier, and it's like,
No.
Right, it's that, right?
Yeah.
I still don't like American nationalism, even when it's shrouded in, like,
paternalism? Thanks.
Technically, we're in a position that wasn't super evil to be involved in a war in World War II, whatever. All the evil shit that we have now comes from that. We weren't that different from the Nazis. We just weren't doing the Holocaust. It's bad.
It's bad. Yeah, exactly. So fuck the hero movies, which I'll still watch, but then, you know, which is better than the Oscars, which I don't watch and then still talk mad shit about. But hold on, let me...
Kumail isn't a Nepo baby, he's a Nepo husband. Okay, that's what I was trying to say.
He's a Nepo husband, yeah. That's pretty fun, too. What were my other comments? Okay, the only other comment that I have about the Oscars, because are we at an hour? Where are we at?
36 minutes.
36 minutes only?
Yeah.
Fuck. God,
you said you wanted to go an hour, right?
Yeah, I know.
Don't worry. I have stuff to talk about, too. If you ever get tired, I'll just go in when I'm on.
Oh, because also JFL.
You said you only want to do an hour. You are a podcast machine. Do you know that?
I am not.
Start talking. I'll tell you when we're done.
Oh, my God. I do have 3 pages of notes, but no.
I know. I have stuff, too. I'll get one in.
Okay. No. The last Oscars thing that I had written. Well, I had Naked John Cena as one, but there's nothing really to comment about that.
Why'd you write it down?
I just wrote it down because it was a nice reminder. And then the other one was Lily Gladstone. So did you see what happened with that?
No.
Lily Gladstone. So Lily Gladstone is a Native American actress who was one of the leads on the Scorsese movie about the flowers, whatever. I forgot what
Killers of the Tower Moon.
Tower Moon. There we go. Thank you.
I'm just kidding. It's Flower Moon.
Flower Moon.
Whatever. I was doing
stupid. I get it. You tricked me. Okay. We're on Moon Tower, everybody. Buy tickets.
Shit. We should probably talk about how JFL's folding. Maybe at some point.
We did. I know. I just said that. We have to talk about JFL folding. But so Lily Gladstone was nominated for Best Actress. Okay. And this was a big deal because she is the first Native American actress ever nominated for Best Actress. So for the people who give a fuck about awards, this was a big deal, right? But then, of course, she didn't win. Big surprise, spoiler alert for everybody who's T-voted. I don't know, however you call it, the fucking Oscars. Emma Stone won for the baby movie. What's it called?
Poor Things.
Poor Things. For Poor Things. Yeah. And, you know, everybody was in an uproar, right? Because, like, bullshit, it should have been Lily Gladstone, right? But then there was, like, a bunch of people who were like, well, you know, that was ridiculous. They shouldn't have put Lily Gladstone up for an award as Best Actress because the amount of screen time that she had was only 4 minutes more than so-and-so. Like, literally, like, technically, like, being like, oh, this person, like, she shouldn't have been nominated for Best Actress. She should have been nominated for Best Supporting Actress, right? And to them, that was the, like, clear reason why she didn't win, was that she wasn't a real leading actress. She was actually a supporting actress. But the decision to put her up, or maybe put herself up as lead actress, is actually a financial one. And I think, as like comics should understand what credits mean, right? And the reality is that, like, if you look at the statistics, I read this whole thing, it's like actors and actresses, after they get nominated for outstanding lead in something, then they continue to book more leading roles.
This is the shit about the awards shows that I find interesting.
It's like the material reality of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, where like
it also seems like a bad system, but it's interesting that it does work.
Well, because everybody thinks that it's about the spectacle. Everybody thinks that it's about the stupid red carpet and what dresses they're wearing and who they came here with, when in reality,
on another level, people also think that it's like about who did the best job, which it's like not, kind of. Yeah. It's about all this other shit.
No, it's about all the other shit. It's about which category they were put up for. It's about, dude, Jake, did you know, I didn't know this today, but did you know that CAA, the management company, bought out IMG, the other management company, in 2022? And by buying out IMG, they became part owners of JFL.
Oh.
So the comics who are represented by CAA, of course you're going to be on JFL.
Yeah, totally.
JFL is part owned by a CAA. It's so ridiculous. So this is what I mean. So
I kind of learned that because I used to live in Austin and like work at and sometimes perform on this thing called Fun Fest that started off as a little music festival that was booked by like music nerd music bookers. And so it was really cool. And how it's had really diverse lineups and stuff, but it got really big over the, like 10 years or whatever that they did it. And there was a comedy stage, and I always thought it was really cool because they like gave us space to do shit. But like the first thing that happened is that Chris True's fucking sexual predator ass was running a improv school down there. So he came in and he took over the comedy booking and would book only his students as like the block. The entire comedy lineup was
a payoff for what they paid for. Yeah.
And then he kind of got pushed out because another year, I remember I asked somebody, I was like, why is it three of the comics that are all on the same TV show? They're all on that Mike Judge show, Silicon Valley. And somebody who works on it explained to me, oh, so when you book festivals at this level, you get package deals from fucking representation like that, where it's like, okay, we'll give you this one person, but you take all of our roster or whatever.
No, and I told you, when I worked for New Faces, it was literally like, so New Faces used to be, so JFL New Faces was the portion of the Just for Laughs festival that featured, quote, new acts, right? Like people that were not like headliners who get their own shows. So what this meant is they divided them into two categories, repped and unrepped. And the unrepped were what it sounds like, they don't have managers. So you could say that that was the closest that it really came to being like merit-based, because they did just watch you and pick which ones to put in. But then if you were unrepped, you had to like pay for your hotel and all this shit. It like was super fucked.
Also, I heard enough stories from behind the scenes of how they picked that. That's like, that wasn't fucking fair either. Somebody was like fucking one of the judges or whatever.
Oh, no, I had never heard that. But what's unfair about it is that most of the like way that you got an audition is by being recommended by someone who was already on it.
But before. What I'm saying is there's hundreds of micro instances within that too of like, how do you get recommended? Well, it's you suck up to the fucking right person and all this stuff.
Right. Yeah. It's,
the totally, thing is a meritocracy. Exactly.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So you're right. You're right about that. But then the repped part was very much like, oh, we have three spots for CAA and three spots for this other agency and three spots for this other agency and one or two for the people that are represented by like independent managers, you know, like some people have like a manager that's not affiliated to any big company. And then that also is like, they don't owe Hank or whatever your fucking manager's name is a favor. It depends on, do you have enough heat, quote unquote, are enough famous people recommending you all this other shit. But even then, like 10 of those plots were just based on like, we can only pick from the people being represented by this particular agency because we have to like quid pro quo them in some way. Yeah. It's fucking ridiculous, dude.
It's fake.
Yeah, it's totally fake. But so understand that like, in this instance, the material reality of the acting world was that it is worth more to be nominated as the first Native American best leading actress and not win than it is to be nominated for the supporting actress role and win, where it's like the category that they always put women of color in.
Yeah. Oh, totally. You know what I mean? That makes sense.
Yeah, so the award seems like the goal for everyone, but how many times do people talk about how these awards like are retroactively given when you were like already proved yourself several times through several films, and then they'll give you the award for like your crappiest film in that year because they're like, oh, so and so was owed this, you know?
I don't understand how that isn't more obvious to people that watch this
shit. Yeah,
it's like every time. One I always think about is Leonardo DiCaprio and The Revenant, which is like a movie that no one's ever seen. Bear. It's like the only one that he won for. And we all know that he was like good in all these other fucking movies.
Well, yeah.
So it's like clearly the mechanism that is being alluded to in this, that there is like that this is a thing where people get together and judge whether you did a good job is a myth.
Clearly
that
out of
all
the
this
goodness,
stuff
yeah of your work yeah
it's incredible. It's like a religion. The thing at the core of it isn't real, and everything else just is dollars changing hands like surrounding it or whatever. I also think about that a lot with the Grammys and like how like near the end of the aughts when like twee indie rock had become, you know, it had gone from a thing that only your cool cousin knows about and has like burned CDs of to like your mom knows about. The final thing that happened was that they gave album of the year, which is usually like, I don't know who the fuck usually gets album of the year, but it's like some dorky mainstream thing. They gave it to the Arcade Fire, which is a very good indie rock band. Mm-hmm. But I remember thinking like, they're trying to be cool. Like they've like caught up to something that was actually groundbreaking 10 years ago by the time that happened or whatever. That's how those fucking shows work. The funniest shit to me is the Grammys have to give out a metal performance thing every year. And it's like just mismatched entirely that show, the Grammys and that genre. But somehow they still like it has to happen. So if you look at who the nominees are, it's insane. Like it's like two. It's like Metallica is every year somehow is in there, and then maybe like Ghost or something, and then just like fuck some obscure shit from like you haven't thought of intent. Toad the Wet Sprocket or something is like fucking last year's nominee because it's just like
band.
It's just those were not the best metal performances of the last year. It's just the only ones that like will work for the mechanism of what the fucking show is.
But that's also how they do like comedy awards of like the Golden Globes and shit when they were like best stand-up album and whatever, and it was just
they gave Ricky Gervais like
dude, it's just like ask your grandma what comedian she can name. Those are the people who nominated.
If you're actually into this shit, it's like infuriating. That's why it's always because this comedy is such a niche art form. Whenever people ask me like, oh, who do you like, I'm like, I'm not even prepared to bridge
the gap.
No,
you
gotta
be like,
between.
Nobody you would know.
That's what I fucking say.
Yeah.
But I, not to even sound like a fucking hipster about it and be like, oh, there's like these cool indie comedians. I also, honestly, what I tell people is like, the reason it's nobody you know is because the people I like the most are just people I know.
And because even if I told you the Arctic Monkeys version of stand-up comedian, you would still not know who that is.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not even being, like, shitty about how you're listening to the Rolling Stones version of stand-up comedian. Like, I am literally, like, no, I know for a fact that you will not know the Black Keys version of stand-up comedian.
Yeah. I usually end up telling people, like, a few who land right in the middle there. Like, I'm like, check out Kyle Kinane. You can Google him.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And there's a ton of Kyle Kinane, and you will like it. But it's better than Ricky Gervais.
Yeah, I always say, fuck, what's his name? Oh, my God, he's from the South. He did the dueling banjos with John Doerr.
Rory Scovel?
Scovel, yeah. Scovel, people will like most of what he does. it's hard. You just totally got to be like, ah, what kind of top 40 are you? Yeah. Let me see. But yeah, that's my coverage of the Oscars, Jake. What do you have to say about that?
I don't know what I have to say about your coverage of the Oscars. I don't even know who won best this and that. I don't fucking
me
care.
Me either. Who cares?
We got 10 minutes left. I want to do a little spiel about something I watched recently that I like a lot.
Go off, King.
I want to talk about This Fool, which was a show on Hulu. Yeah. I just watched all of it. It's two seasons, and it's all of it because they just fucking canceled it. The actors from it just announced on Twitter, hey, we didn't get a third season or whatever. There's maybe like a push to like hashtag fucking save This Fool or whatever. If there is, I'll fucking tweet about it because I really like the show.
Hashtag save This Fool is the hashtag they're using.
If it's a thing, I guess is what I'm kind of joking about here, is if it's going to happen, if it's going to work at all, I would be happy to help. But one of the reasons that I really, there's a couple things going on here. One of them is like, I don't know if you know who made it, but like there was this show called Corporate a few years ago before.
Yeah, shout out Jake Wiseman, love you.
Right, it was Jake Wiseman, Matt Ingebretson, some of these other white guys from LA. I think Alan Strickland Williams was involved in that crew. Yeah. That was like a scene. They had a sketch group.
Alan, we love you. We love you so much.
Yeah, for sure. You're one of the only good ones.
Favorite.
You're one of the good ones, Alan. But like, so that was like a crew of people. You know, like there's like, even unofficially, there's like little gangs in comedy. But they had a sketch group called Women. It was pretty good.
It was great.
Never really had a bad thing to say about these guys. You know, I'm sure if I dig, there's something. Nobody gets past the Flores test, right? But like, they seem cool. Like, I always like them when I run into them. They're kind of the same class as me.
I think they would get past your test, except for maybe being slightly careerist because they're from LA.
Yeah, but that's not like damning. Like, I think that about most people, like, because I'm the most hardcore or whatever about that, right? But that's kind of actually, I'm going to get to that. So they made this show called Corporate. Corporate was really good. Lance Reddick was on it. He was on Very the fucking good. Wire. Yeah. Like, it was a Comedy Central. It was like one of the last just Comedy Central made a shows before they just like.
I'm also going to plug, you've got like 3 more months to watch it on ComedyCentral.com and then it's all going away. But you can currently see Corporate for free on ComedyCentral.com. Go to Digital Originals. I make sure it's playing. Go on.
If you're good at pirating, get on that shit.
Get on it, yeah.
Wink, wink, asterisk, fake satire. That's becoming the only way to watch certain shit. Like, as somebody pointed out recently, the only way to really watch Daria in its original form is to pirate it, because if you watch it on streaming shit, the copyright and all the music fucking fell out. And that was, like, the music was, like, a huge part of it. Yeah. Anyway, so Corporate was really good. It went for, I don't know, a season or two or something, and then, you know, it's a show, so it just went under. But clearly,
three
like, this...
seasons.
The cool good clearly the same like group of people produced and made This Fool happen. But what's interesting about it is that it's fronted by this guy Chris Estrada, this other guy Frankie Quinones, and like they're Latin dudes, they're fucking cholo dudes from LA, or at least I think so, because that's who they play on the show. And also they're like, I kind of know some people that are adjacent stand-up
wise.
They
are real stand-ups. Frankie Quinones is a real stand-up. He tours. Estrada, also very funny. They are actual real stand-ups, not like not people that you stand up to platform into comedy. They're kind of like doing the traditional thing of like making a show out of a whole stand-up's life.
Yeah, I care as much, I think, as you probably do about that as like a fucking point of integrity, but it is cool to see. I just mean, when I go to Chatterbox, their names on flyers and shit. Like, oh, these are like cool. Like, I kind of have my cross paths with these people. They feel like real human beings to me or whatever. And I hadn't watched their show until I started to kind of hear about it in the last year, and I started it. And then when I started to hear that it was getting get shut down, I binged it. And it's fucking good. It's really well written. It's clever the way the white guys, like, they're in the scenes sometimes, but they're in the background as if to, like, sort of show you, like, the story got spun off. We're going to kind of, like, platform these other people and stuff. It's a little woke, you know. But when I watch the credits, I'm like, Curtis Cook, like, is, like, the story editor or some shit. Yeah. He's cool. He's a funny-ass comic. I know that guy.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it, and I kind of
just realized he got off Twitter by you saying that.
Did he really?
I mean,
a lot of people are getting off.
Long time.
It's
yeah.
like ending.
Yeah, I know. But go on. I'm sorry.
Well, so I was prepared for the product to be mediocre, not for reasons of personal fucking integrity of any of these people, just because it's a product. And as we discuss often, the material incentives like kind of take the edges off a lot of the stuff. But honestly, I think it had really good like messaging and politics. And it was like kind of it fused like classic archetypes with modern shit in a lot of ways. So like the main Chris Estrada plays a guy named Julio. He's like the straight man, right? And then Frankie Quinones plays Lewis, and he's like the comic relief. And like there's stuff I noticed like that reflects shit that maybe I'm just like seeing too much of it in, but I feel like it's stuff we talk about. And I was thinking a lot about labor, like while I was watching the plot arcs of this guy, Luis, right? Because Luis is the one who gets out of prison. And then the story is that his brother, Julio, like has like a halfway house, sort of like, what do you call it? Like a nonprofit called Hugs Not Thugs that like rehabilitates ex-cons into society. And like his cousin is, so he's just got out of fucking prison. So he's not caught up with like a lot of the woke stuff. And he says words you're not supposed to say and stuff like that. But like ultimately, right, they're fucking both good people or whatever. And they're both members of the working class. And then the third guy is Minister Payne, who's played by Michael Imperioli from the fucking Sopranos. He's really fucking funny. And he's like this grizzled, like used to be activist, but he's like hitting the wall with like trying to fight class war and be a good person, and he's continuously like tempted with like selling out or just like fucking going guns blazing on people and shit.
Yeah.
And so like stuff happens, like at one point they get an offer from like a supposedly benevolent millionaire billionaire played by Fred Armisen, who's like, I'm gonna give you guys a bunch of money to fund your thing if you do something, right? I'm not gonna give it away, but it's like very funny. He tries to like tempt them into doing something, and like, or actually I kind of have to, okay, so spoiler alert, it's he's trying to get one of them to fuck his wife, and because he's like a decadent billionaire guy, right? And so a couple things happen with the fucking Frankie Quinones character. One of them is that he, first of all, he's like really into the, he wants to fuck the guy's wife. But the other thing is that he starts to pal around when the rich people come to the nonprofit, like Minister Payne, he's a class war guy. He reads a theory. He's like, he started the infrastructure, all this stuff, 'cause he hates the rich. So he's like, I fucking hate these people. I'm, you know, like they have to get him to stop, you know, barking shit under his breath at the billionaire and stuff. Other end of the table, the character who just got out of prison, he's like doing all this shit where he's like, yo, hey, maybe we can hang out, you know? And like I could work for you, you know? And like, you could, you know, maybe I become a billionaire someday or whatever. And they're illustrating like the thing where like, you know, the guy who's read all the theory understands that that's his class enemy. The dumb guy who's just going off of fucking nothing and was in prison, he's like kind of tricked himself into thinking that he's on the side of the billionaire guy. And that's like, and it's written really clever. Like it's done through comedy, but it illustrates stuff about how like you're tempted as an individual in society to side with your own oppressors because you're like the petty bourgeois, right? You consider yourself a temporarily embarrassed millionaire and you think you're closer to Donald Trump than you are to fucking working class people and stuff like that. And like, I don't know, I was kind of thinking about this all because like when we were talking about Shane Gillis and everything, and like, you know, I kind of had this like this thing I always hammer where it's like, well, if you're an individual comic and you're in this world, you have agency, you have like the things you do matter. And I think that when you just were talking about like the fucking Mark Ruffalo and people like that at the Oscars, I think you believe that too on some level. Otherwise, what the fuck are we doing here?
Totally.
But then it's like, you know, when you have a day job, it's kind of the reverse. And I'm someone who argue it's the reverse. So when you work at McDonald's, you can't really stick your neck out that much because you work for an evil machine. And you also have you don't get to choose whether you work at McDonald's or not. It's the only job in your neighborhood. The dynamics are all different. That's why I'm always getting into this idea of like there being like proletarian forced into the situation labor and elective labor, which is what artists won't admit that that's the situation they're in. And I think those are different. And I think that's why this is where I was going with all this. I was thinking about this all week and I was like, huh, I kind of have a contradiction here, because when I work at McDonald's, I kind of go, well, you have to do what you have to do. And when comedians say you have to do what you have to do, I go, no, fuck agree. You.
Yeah.
I don't agree. And it's because I think those are two fundamentally different situations.
I
think that the difference is, so when you work at McDonald's, you can openly be critical of McDonald's and everyone understands, like, yeah, they're not your friend. We all get that this is like a fucking evil corporate force. But the reality is,
you also can't, though. You also can't do it in front of your manager, and you also can't do it online.
But it's accepted by people.
By your friends. Yeah.
It's accepted by people who would not apply that same logic to working for The Creek in the Cave or The Stand or Just for Laughs or Moon Tower.
But it isn't, though, because you're assuming that it's like the same group of like online or comedy people who would totally understand that you're talking shit about working at Starbucks or working at McDonald's or working at whatever. But in reality, if you are tweeting about how McDonald's sucks, you are endangering your job at McDonald's. If you are at work talking to your coworkers about how we should unionize and how this sucks and how our manager sucks, you are endangering your job.
Right. You're endangering yourself in the eyes of, like, the threat is McDonald's. It's not your coworkers. What I'm saying was, with comedy, if I start talking about how one of the people that we work for is bad, people that even consider themselves leftists will be like, no, they helped me out a lot. Did you know that they produced Shane Torres' special? Like, they're trying to help us all, you know?
Yeah.
A rising tide lifts all boats and all this shit.
I see your point.
And it's like, no. The McDonald's logic applies to Cap City Comedy Club in Austin. It applies to the fucking Moon Tower people. It applies to all this shit.
I see. Okay, so what you're saying basically is that if in the McDonald's job situation, you were speaking out about the truth, like criticizing your employer in a truthful way, the only people who would sell you out to the employer would be other employees who are like self-evidently avaricious and anti-communist and anti-coworker and anti-community of worker.
Yeah.
Whereas in comedy, the community is supposedly built on not criticizing and not siding like against the employer.
Yeah, and the rationale for it kind of goes along the lines of like small business rationale, where you're like, oh, but they're my friend and they're like they're trying to help, we're all in this together and they're trying to help us. But it's also because of like, I don't know, like the elective labor thing, I think to some degree, because like it's almost like a taboo to point that out. Like, you're seen as someone who people want to believe that actually the people that we work for in this industry have our interests at heart. And it's not something that is as cliche. You're not going to open up a Crime Think magazine and there's like a fucking joke about that. There will be a joke about McDonald's, though. Like, oh, it's an evil corporation. But because of small business and because of like the fucking individuated pursuit of fame, we actually think like fucking libs about this, and it's bad. And that's why I'm always like yelling about this. Like, this thinking is not going to make things better for any of us. This is all just rationalizing, wanting to make our own individual paths easier, which is like, also, I've been on Twitter lately, and like every comic I see, even like people, comics from like marginalized backgrounds, like especially almost, kind of like conceive of justice as them getting to do this ridiculous career, and it just like it doesn't fucking matter. Like, like the world is not gonna be saved, class war doesn't happen, Palestine isn't free if you specific person get to be a staff writer. That does not fucking matter. That's lib thinking.
Let me give a shout out here to Amanda Seals. I don't know if you know Amanda Seals. She's a stand-up comic. She's in LA. She's been around for a long time. She was also in New York. She did stuff, you know, for MTV and VH1, all that shit. She's great. She's a very intelligent, outspoken Black woman who's also very funny. And she, like, has been consistently putting out videos since October 7th and before about all, like, Palestine, all this stuff. But then recently, last week, she put out a video that I guess was in response to some of the DMs and shit that she gets from people. And basically the point of her post was where she was like, I want some Black people to understand that when a Black person achieves capitalist success, that is not equated to liberation of Black people.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
all right. Whole cosine.
Was like, yeah, exactly. It was trying to explain that of like, it is not about like hating on the success of a Black person who becomes rich and famous. It's about getting all other Black people to understand that when X Black person becomes rich and powerful, that is not a signifier or even like, it's definitely not a signifier, but it's absolutely not a equating of material reality for the rest of Black people to be also liberated in the ways that a newly minted millionaire Black person is, right? Yeah. And I think that's exactly what you're saying about comedians, where they are, they want to say, like, me personally having the freedom to say slurs or to do this and then like get on SNL and do all the stuff and get famous, that's like a small step for me, but a huge step for comedian kind. And it's like, it actually isn't. It has nothing to do with me. Good for you on your personal success, but it isn't in any way liberating comedians from the things that oppress them in the ability to make their art or express themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I would almost argue that it's like the other way around, where it just reinforces the inherent power imbalance. The way that happens in regular old capitalism, I mean, they keep a small amount of people have to be successful in order to motivate everyone in the surplus army of labor
to try to like, reach that. Yeah,
that could be me too. And like, there has to be less of them than there are of us down here in order for, you know, everyone everyone to work the minimum wage jobs and stuff, you know?
Yeah. This is why the whole next episode is going to be about Al-Qassam and Octavia Butler. Okay. This is what we're going to talk about. Please study up, watch all the Al-Qassam communiques, read all of their reports from the battlefield, and also read the,
I've read Parable of the Sower.
Yeah, and then we'll ready have something to work next off episode. Of. That's what it is. Write us an email if you already have questions and feelings about how I'm going to connect Octavia Butler to Al-Qassam and Ansarallah. Go Houthis. Yay. Okay. Anyway, yes.
In the next episode. Okay. All right. Yeah. We're a little over an hour. You want to kick it?
Yeah, we're out. Fuck this. We're out. All right. Also, we'll do this more regularly. I'm sorry I've been out. I'm having to adjust with a lot of shit. I can't handle winter and also time change. I don't know, man.
Oh, same shit. I've been like sick and stuff. Whatever.
Totally. But we'll do another one within a week. And today I'll release last month's to the public. And this one will be just for our Patreon people. And then we'll do another one next week just for our Patreon people as well.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. Bye. Oh, bye. Wait. Do you want to
play? Are you mad?